Okay, thank you. So, so today I want to tell you about some work which is not strictly very closely related to intertwined order, but hopefully it will still be interesting. So the things I worked on with Jason at LISIC from Caltech, and it's mainly from these lower two papers here. And I also want to mention this somewhat earlier work with Andrew Essin, where back then we didn't really understand, at least I didn't really understand what we were doing, but it was kind of important to lead to all this stuff which came later. So I want to tell you about dualities for Dirac fermions in 2+1 dimensions, but as a warm-up and to set the stage, I want to remind you a little bit about something which we probably all know, which is a duality in 1+1 dimensions in the quantum easing model. So the model is very simple. We have just the one-dimensional chain shown over here. At each site, we have some spin, like a spin 1/2. And there are two terms. We have a nearest neighbor coupling, which wants to put these spins into ferromagnetic phase. And in addition, we have a transverse field term over here, which wants to make the spin points along this field direction and form a paramagnet. And the function of this, the ratio between the two, or the difference between these two, we get a phase transition at some point, where we have spontaneous magnetization on one side when J dominates, and the paramagnet without magnetization on the other side when the transverse field dominates. And we can also put some energy scale over here, which is essentially the mass of excitations in the paramagnetic phase. But that's something that we know very well. And a nice feature about this model is that it has this property that it's, it has a duality transformation, which one can use to actually understand quite a lot about this model. So this is a transformation. It looks, again, quite simple. We write down the nearest neighbor spin interaction term as a new kind of Pauli matrix in the transverse direction, and likewise we write the transverse field term as this nearest neighbor exchange for these new degrees of freedom. And this is of course a non-local transformation which one sees if one tries to express the upper term over here in terms of a single sigma V Pauli matrix. So one needs this infinitely long string operator. But in terms of pieces in the Hamiltonian, only these things appear. So despite this non-locality, we map a local model to a local model. And specifically, the models look exactly the same, just the role of J and H is interchanged. So now H becomes the nearest neighbor coupling, and J becomes the transverse field term. So you can equivalently express the phase diagram in terms of the dual degrees of freedom, where now for large H, we have a spontaneous breaking of dual spins if you want, and a mass for the dual spin in this J-dominant region. And an important property is the fact that it's self-dual, that it maps onto one another, immediately tells us that the transition between these two phases must happen exactly when J and H are equal. Right? That then precisely these models become identical to one another. So that's already quite nice, equivalent in terms of the masses. But an even cooler aspect of this model is that we can write it in some fermionic representation. And for that, we take the spin operator, sigma z, and combine it with the dual spin operator, tau z. And if one combines this kind of object, it's some non-local thing, because sigma z is non-local. And this turns out to be a fermion. So one can define different ones, depending on whether the dual spin or the original spin is above and below. And these guys are Majorana fermions in that they're real and they have anti-commutation relations on different sites. Now, if you think about these as fermions, we can see that in order to create such an object, such an excitation, we need to essentially create a sigma z and a tau z. But in generic pieces in this phase diagram, these excitations are actually gapped. Right? So in this phase over here, the sigma z is gapped, and over here, the tau z is gapped. So in that sense, we can roughly attribute a mass to these Majorana fermions, which is finite everywhere except at this critical point where both of these masses vanish. And so this is kind of a natural way that we hear the critical point is described by a fermionic theory. And one can make this a little bit more precise, maybe, by going to the lattice version and actually writing down a one-dimensional chain for these Majorana fermions. So these are precisely the Majorana fermions which are defined. And we see that the hopping along this chain, like from this Majorana to the next one, it's determined by this J coupling, the next one by the H coupling, J coupling, and so on. Right? So the different spin exchange couplings just become hopping terms in this Majorana chain, which is why we can actually solve everything exactly. It's just a quadratic theory in terms of these spins. And so at this critical point where we had this the self-duality of the spin model, it turns out that for this fermionic chain, we have an enhanced symmetry. Namely, at this point, we have a symmetry where we can, all these terms are equal, so we have a translation symmetry from this one to this one, and so on, which is not present anywhere away from this specific point. And it follows that if you just calculate the band structure is gapless at this specific point, and anywhere else we have a gap. So the self-duality, which ensures criticality, becomes a symmetry which ensures the gapless spectrum in terms of the fermionic degrees of freedom. Summarize again. We have a duality transformation exchanging sigma by tau, and that corresponds in terms of the Majoranas to exchanging, the one where the blue guy is on top, and the red on the bottom, to the one where they interchanged. And this is precisely this translation by one half site. And maybe as a small side remark, this symmetry, this translation by single Majorana mode, is somewhat anomalous in the sense that it doesn't actually commute with fermion parity. But one can still have it kind of as an abstract thing for discussing the spin models or possibly at the surface of some two-dimensional phase. Okay, so knowing this one-dimensional duality for the easing model, one can actually get quite far two-dimensional models by just extending it into one more direction. And the way to do this is instead of taking individual sites with a spin, we replace each site by a wire, which gives us one more direction, One more direction, x, which is continuous along over here. And the analogy follows by the order parameter of the spin model, sigma z, becomes a boson, which can be ordered in terms of superfluid. So the two phases are like so. If this guy has an expectation value, we're in a magnet. If this guy has an expectation value, we're in a superfluid, and we can draw it something like this. This is a complex number, so we can draw it, say, on a cylinder. And in the superfluid, it, as a function of x, looks something like that. So clearly over here, this complex number has some expectation value. So now we want to get different phases. And in the spin model, we do that by creating defects. So we can start flipping spins over here. And if we flip enough spins, then we end up in a paramagnetic phase. So the analog expression for the superfluid is a phase flip operator. So we can introduce this kind of operator here. The form is not so important, but what it does, it essentially takes this boson, which I was drawing on the cylinder of a surface, and winds the phase once around. And if we have many, many such events, then the phase is pretty much anywhere on the cylinder, and we lose the expectation value for our boson. So in this case, we would get the mod insulator. We proliferate these kind of guys. And exactly as we had in the easing model. So now, in the easing model, we are performing this duality. We are combining the nearest neighbor coupling between these spins to form a new dual spin flip operator, and we're combining the second object to perform into form this spin exchange. So now, by analogy, we can do the same thing for the bosons and vortices. We can combine the hopping of bosons and call this now a dual phase flip operation. And we can take this phase flip operation and can call it the hopping of dual bosons, or the hopping of vortices. So the phase flip of the original guys is just the hopping of a vortex across such wires. And in that way, we have a dual description of the same physics. Again, in full analogy, we have a dual order parameter, which is like the dual spin. We have the dual phase flip, which is just like the dual spin flip. And we can write this model in terms of these vortex operators, which then can move along the wire and hop across wires. And we can identify the possible phases. In this case, when sigma z is ordered, we get, it's not ordered, we get the ferromagnet, respectively the superfluid. And when they're disordered, then we get the paramagnet or the mod insulator in terms of the original degrees of freedom. And that's kind of a way how one can really get from this one-dimensional duality to the two-dimensional one, which we mostly also know quite well. And in terms of Hamiltonians, in the easing model, we had this precise mapping between these two terms for Hamiltonian, which gave us self-duality. Now, for the boson vortex case, with these wires, we still have the exact equivalence between these two terms, the hopping of bosons, and these phase dip terms. They become the hopping and phase dip of vortices. But there's one different piece, which is the kinetic energy. So in this 2 plus 1 dimensional model, the bosons, they cannot only hop across wires and have a phase dip, they can actually move along the wires. And that's the part where this kind of breaks down. So if you're trying to use these operators and express them in terms of vortices, we don't get this exact equivalence. Right? So we don't have self-duality in this case, which is, of course, something we know very well. We know that if we have bosons with short-range interactions, they're not supposed to be equivalent to vortices with short-range interactions. And instead, what we know is that if we have bosons with short-range interactions, that's kind of a model Lagrangian. This is a phase diagram. We can have an insulating phase and a condensed phase. And this is actually equivalent to a theory of vortices which have long-range interactions. We've written over here, so they are interacting with some emergent gauge field which has a Maxwell term, which just mediate the long-range interactions. You know, so we can identify the same phases, but these models are clearly not self-dual. They're actually somewhat different. So if this approach is supposed to work, then we need to be able to also see how this gauge field is necessary to make these things dual to one another. And turns out the way to do it is just take this kinetic energy, express it in terms of bosons, and just use this dictionary, this expression of bosons in terms of phase dip operators to get something. I don't specify what it is. It's some horrible non-local object. So that's something that we have. And then we can take an alternative step where we just, well, we kind of hope that we get the gauge theory. So let's take the Lagrangian of some vortex field coupled to a gauge field and integrate out the gauge field. Formally, we can always do that. And of course, we're going to get something which is, again, non-local. So in both cases, we have non-local theories. And the statement of duality is simply that actually these non-local theories are both the same. So one can perform this, and this, in fact, checks out. So that is how one can derive the boson vortex duality in this context over here. So that's kind of what we understand. We have bosons corresponding to short-range and long-range vortices, and the other way around. But to make the connection to this Ising model and the fermions more concrete, we'd like to have a model which is actually self-dual, which is exactly the same whether we expressed it in terms of vortices or in terms of bosons. Now, fortunately, such a model actually exists and has been known for a long time. And I guess Steve and Eduardo were the ones working on this. So if we actually take bosons with kind of called intermediate range interactions, this just refers to the scaling. It's a single power of momentum sitting here. Then this model is equivalent to a model of vortices with a very similar kind of, this similar kind of Chern-Simon term over here, which has just a single power of momentum. So this model can, in fact, be made exactly self-dual. And here in this continuum limit, one maybe can't see it so well. But in terms of these wires, one can really make this these two descriptions equivalent on all length scales.
The sign has changed.
Exactly, the sign has changed. Yeah, that's important. Because it's kind of an anti-unitary, right? So they're exactly the same. You need to make complex conjugation over here. So the phases will be the same. Like, you don't change the location of the phases. But that, in fact, will be important for interpreting this as an anti-unitary symmetry. But,
it's not a self-duality. It's not a self-dual model.
It's a question what you mean by that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right. So this is a model which we have. And, I would call it self-duality, but there's this caveat about this complex conjugation. And this self-duality or self-duality after conjugation, that's what we want to interpret as a symmetry in some fermionic formulation. Same way as we did with the Ising model, where we had this self-duality and we wrote it as a symmetry. So, so let's recall how that went. So in that case, we had a spin, we had a dual spin, and we combined them and formed this Jordan-Wigner fermion, which became massless at the critical point. Now in this case, we have the boson and the vortex. We can, again, combine them to form an object, which is typically called the composite fermion. And the structure is very much the same. The boson is massive over here. So to create this fermion, we need to overcome the boson mass. Here, over here. Here, the vortex is massive. So to create the fermion, we need to pay the vortex mass. But at this point, they're both massless. So here, the fermion can become gapless. And so that's the structure. And in this case, it turns out we can actually define two kinds of composite fermions, depending on whether we take a boson and this kind of vortex, and boson and the opposite kind of vortex. And so this structure is, of course, absent in the Ising model, where we just have the Z2. So actually, you know, the two kind of vortices would be the same. So, you know, so that's kind of the basic picture. We again have some kind of fermions which become massive. The mass is at the critical point. And to make this more precise, let's go back again to these wires and try to follow exactly the same steps as we did for the Ising model, now for bosons and vortices. So here we define dual spins. For the bosons, we define vortices. We defined two kinds of fermions. One was blue up, one was blue down. In this case, we can define two kinds of composite fermions, depending, so note that here the vortex is in the same direction in both cases. They only differ by the relative orientation of boson and vortex. One case it's above, one case it's below. So now I label them as left and right, and that's something which unfortunately one cannot infer simply by a picture, but that's just something that will come out. But you know, the important point here is we have some kind of an internal degree of freedom, which is just the relative orientation of these two objects. And under duality, I'm just replacing bosons by vortices, these two get interchanged, right? The boson on top becomes the boson on the bottom, and the other way around, exactly as we had it in the Ising model. So now let's take these fermions. So we have now the left fermions and the right fermions living on these wires. And so far, all they can do is move along these wires. I have not considered any hopping of the bosons or of the vortices. So let's try to understand what happens once we make it an actual 2D phase and allow the bosons or the vortices to propagate in this direction over here. I consider such a configuration. We have a boson and a vortex sitting here, and now the boson hops down. Right? So in this picture over here, the boson hops down. It's gone from over here, returning a right fermion sitting here into a left fermion sitting down here. Now, the same thing happens if a vortex hops across this bosonic wire. This kind of vortex hopping corresponds to a process where a left fermion becomes a right fermion on the wire below. So that's the structure. We have boson hopping, vortex hopping, and in terms of the fermionic ones, they correspond to two terms in the band structure, namely hopping between even wires and hopping between odd wires. Now, this looks very much like what we had in the Majorana chain. And in fact, we can also just analyze the band structure of these fermions and kind of see what comes out. So that's this kinetic term in this direction, which we already had. That's the hopping term in the special point where bosons and vortices can hop around equally. And to analyze the band structure, which is not super obvious from these kind of terms, it's convenient to choose as a basis these two component spinners, where we just combine the right fermion and the left fermions. And in this basis, this wire kinetic energy is just kx times this Pauli matrix tau z. And that's just the intra-wire kinetic energy. Now, the hopping term, it connects even wires and odd wires, or left and right moving fermions. So it will be this off-diagonal object. And if we have this, well, we expand the sign. So we just get, again, momentum times the Pauli matrix. Or in other words, we get a Dirac Hamiltonian.
Why is it a sine and not a cosine?
It's essentially conventional. You choose how you choose your phases. So you can move it around to the momentum space. You can have this cone sitting at 0 or at pi. It doesn't matter so much. Right. So what you have is you actually end up with a single Dirac cone, as we're familiar with this table from the surface of a topological insulator, where the two components of this Dirac fermion are just this right and left fermion, or this boson above or boson below. This is what we have. So that's the structure of what we expect to get on the band structure level without worrying about, you know, it's not the precise action, it's just the kind of fermionic band structure that we will have at a critical point where bosons and vortices can propagate equally. Now, this is kind of what I'm showing. The same is true regardless of the orientation, which hasn't entered so far. So whether we use the blue kind of fermions or these orange kind of fermions, we in both cases expect some object which is massive away from the phase transition and becomes massive precisely at the phase transition. And from this picture, we can understand how the symmetry of or the dualities of the bosons are related to the properties of the fermions. So in the bosons, we are considering this kind of duality where we just replace boson by vortex. And just looking at the pictures, we can see that if we replace boson by vortex, that just interchanges the up fermion and the down fermion. In other words, the bosonic duality corresponds to a time reversal type transformation for these fermions. Now, time reversal, on the other hand, for the bosons, which changes the orientation of the vortex, turns a blue fermion into an orange fermion, goes in this direction. And one can also consider charge conjugation. So we have two transformations. The local transformation for the bosons becomes kind of non-local in terms of fermions. It changes, you know, orange to blue, whereas this non-local duality transformation becomes a simple symmetry in terms of the fermions.
Don't you have to combine with the translation as well?
That's right. So this is kind of a statement for, you know, close to k equals zero. So the translation is essentially becomes identity. But yeah, in, you know, on the lattice scale, it is this property combined with the translation by half a unit.
Do you also get t squared equal minus 1?
Sorry?
So do you also get t squared?
Yeah, so that depends a little bit on, you know, essentially how you take the band structure, how exactly you choose it. So, you know, you can choose it in such a way, in this momentum, if you take the continuum limit, but you get it. T squared. How do you get t squared?
Time reversal.
Exactly, this symmetry. So if you take the continuum limit along this, you know, with this chosen band structure I put over here, then you indeed get that time reversal squares to, you know, it's not to a number, it squares to an operator, it squares to minus 1 times e to the ik. And if you expand this object for small k, then you get minus 1. But strictly speaking, it's still, there's still momentum sitting there.
Well, just by looking at that psi A sigma to psi B sigma, it's not...
Well, from here, from that, you can't see from the picture, right? I mean, these pictures are not capable of representing signs in terms of when you act transformations. This is essentially all you can see is how stuff is locally or non-locally related. Okay, so, you know, so this is just kind of on the band structure level. On the band structure level, I was arguing that what you get is just fermionic dispersion. Now, to actually understand where these fermions are non-interacting, strongly interacting, and so on, one needs to perform exactly the same step as I was doing for the boson-vortex duality. Namely, one can, you know, start with a theory, which is non-local, express it in terms of different variables, and see if the outcome will be local or non-local. So in this case, it turns out if I take a lattice version of this model over here. Yes?
Just making sure I haven't gotten lost. Big A is the external electromagnetic field that's not dynamic.
In this case, they're both dynamical on both sides.
Both dynamic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right, so that's when these are self-dual.
Okay.
Up to. Right. So I take a lattice version of this model, which is, of course, non-local. I can start with a wire version of this, integrate of the gauge field. I get some non-local theory of the boson variable.
Right.
Then I replace these boson degrees of freedom by fermionic ones according to this. I have a vortex operator. I have a boson operator. I just, you know, perform the mapping. It's, again, a non-local transformation. And it turns out what I get in this case is a purely local theory of these fermions. Just have kinetic energy and hopping. So this kind of complicated model maps onto just a free Dirac theory on this wire regularization. Right, so that's what happens if I'm taking kind of the blue fermions. If I'm using the same model and instead try to express it in terms of the orange fermions, what I instead find a theory which has fermions strongly coupled to a photon. This is a theory which is, you know, kind of n equals 1 QE3. So it's fermions coupled to a gauge field.
Can you just repeat that last part, the orange? What's the difference between the orange and the blue? I mean,
so the orientation of the vortex,
okay.
That's the only difference. Right, so these are just different operators, and I just plug it in. And essentially it depends, like, the orientation of the vortex and the sign of this transignment here.
Like attaching two vortices to the fermion.
That goes from the orange to the blue, exactly right, yeah. Right, so these are kind of two representations. Now the point is both of these have some kind of symmetry, you know, which essentially protects this Dirac point over here. Some time reversal or particle hole symmetry is needed to protect this Dirac point. Otherwise, it would become massive, and that's precisely what corresponds to the critical point of this boson or vortex theory. Right, that's kind of how it goes. So that's how we interpret this bosonic duality, or in this case, it's bosonic self-duality, as a symmetry of fermions. But at the same time, what we see over here is an equivalence or a duality on the fermionic side. Right? So if you can follow all these steps, what we find is that this theory, this pre-fermion theory, is actually equivalent to this interacting theory for the orange fermions, which is, you know, very same structure as the boson-vortex duality. And that, in fact, is the particle vortex duality of fermions, which has been worked out over the last 2 years by a number of people, just saying that fermions with short interactions are in fact equivalent in some sense to these fermions with long range interactions. And the important part is that this only works if your fermion has two components, kind of like as on the surface of a TI. If you have two components of the fermions, you don't get this similar mapping between free and interacting theories. So it's a little bit special. So this is, you know, we can have, and this is something which, in, at least in the wire model, one can actually kind of derive it up to subtleties with this translation, but this is really like an, you know, exact mapping. So one has it, you have it this way and that way. And, you know, if we have these two, we can follow the same trick and say, well, now we can make the fermion self-dual, right? Take fermions, intermediate interactions. In this case, it's again a transient term. The field is dynamical on both sides. It's again the same change in the sign. The only difference between the bosonic case is a factor of 2. So in the bosonic case, we had here 4 pi. Now we have 8 pi. And in this case, the fermionic model is again what I would call self-dual. And one can ask, well, now this fermionic self-duality, can we understand it as a bosonic symmetry? And that's actually even simpler than we had before. Just staring at these objects, if we have a fermionic duality, which means interchanging the blue guys and the orange guys, well, the boson is the same, but the orientation of the vortex changes. But that's precisely what time reversal does on the bosonic theory. It changes the orientation of the vortex. So we can interpret the fermionic duality just as a simple local symmetry of the bosonic formulation.
So this is, that's attaching two fluxes to the fermions. That's the A.
That's essentially what it is. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you can do it. Can you just go back?
Mm-hmm.
And the sign is opposite. Yes.
Right.
I mean, it's plus I A with right pi and minus.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So in this, so now that's, you know, the analogous thing with before. Fermionic self-duality is just a bosonic symmetry, or equivalently a symmetry on the vortex formulation. And that's kind of been worked out last year by partially the high energy community as well as Chong and Center. So the basic upshot up to here is we have a bosonic self-duality, which is fermionic symmetry. We have a fermionic self-duality, it's a bosonic symmetry. So one can ask, for example, can we actually both be, you know, can the bosonic model be self-dual and the fermionic model, kind of everything be as dual as it gets? And for that, we can just say, take the bosons and say, okay, well, we need the first piece. We need this bosonic self-duality. And at the same time, we also need this bosonic time reversal symmetry, because that is what would give us the fermionic self-duality. So can we have these two ingredients at the same time? And the answer can again be found in this work by Stephen Eduardo, who also wrote down this kind of model, where we don't have a transient term, but instead this kind of maybe somewhat unusual coupling for the propagator for the gauge field, where we have a Maxwell term, but divided by 1 power of momentum sitting over here. Right, so this, again, has a total of like 1 power of momentum, so it's scaled the same way, but it is time reversal symmetric. And from this previous discussion, it follows instantly that this model is actually both self-dual and time reversal symmetric, also when we express it in terms of fermions. For this specific parameter here, lambda needs to be 1. And one can work it out, and one sees that if you take this boson model, it looks the same in terms of vortices. It looks almost the same in terms of fermions, again, if this factor of 2 sitting here, or in terms of dual fermions. So this is kind of a very special point in this kind of space of models, where we have both time reversal symmetry and self-duality, regardless of which variable we use to express this model in.
Here there's a fixed line, a coefficient
Sorry?
The coefficient of 1 over 4 pi can be just any real number. Is that right?
Well, you see here, under duality, this lambda becomes 1 over lambda. Right? That's the duality condition. Right? So if you tune lambda away from this point, these models remain time whistle symmetric, but they become non-self-dual. And then if you translate that one back to the fermions, you actually make the fermionic model non-time whistle symmetric.
But they remain critical.
They remain self-dual, yes.
I think the truth is they remain critical.
Exactly. You expect that the criticality persists kind of independently, like in the fermionic model. You can go for lambda from 0 to infinity, and you kind of remain critical. That's the statement over here. And in fact, that's kind of the last thing I want to briefly mention. Now I want to just take a generalized model where I want to take some arbitrary value of the lambda, which I can use to kind of parameterize the strength or long rangedness of my interactions from short range, lambda equals 0, to kind of lambda equals infinity, where you formally have like the Maxwell terms of strong interactions, or through the fermions. And I put a second axis along which I break time versus symmetry, by which I just mean I'm adding a Trans-Simons term with some coefficient gamma, which is 0 over here, and the way it increases, and that these are the specific points which you considered before, 1 over 4 pi for the bosons, and 1 over 8 pi for the fermions. And this duality mapping I described, it can take any point in this generalized bosonic model and map it exactly to a point in this generalized fermionic model. And this is what one finds if one actually works it out. So here, I can parameterize these bosonic models by some complex number. And there's some specific mapping along which any point here maps onto any point over here. And then there are some special lines. For example, the vertical line in the middle here, that would be the case where the bosonic model is time versus symmetric. And that corresponds to like a semicircle in the fermionic model, which connects this pure Trans-Simons term to the time versus symmetric case to the pure Trans-Simons term on the other side. And the very special point in the model is kind of in the beginning, where the vertical line and where the semicircle intersect. Like that's the point where the model is both time universal symmetric and self-dual. I can kind of draw it in a slightly different way. And if I, again, this is this kind of same two-dimensional plane. I just added some short-range interactions over here, which are not too important. And these are where all the models are sitting. Down here, we just have short-range interactions, and the time universal symmetric. That's just the short-range boson model, which under duality becomes vortices with long-range interactions. Over here, these are the bosons of the Trans-Simons term, which is equivalent to the free fermion theory, same as over here. And in the middle, we have the special point where we have self-duality for bosons and for fermions. Now, in terms of the fermions, the special point remains the same, but the other ones, 1 and 2, and the vertical ones move here, and the horizontal ones move over there. And we can attribute the different phases of the bosons, which is the vortex can be condensed, or the boson can be condensed. They simply become the sign of the fermionic mass. And along this special line, which we get to the question which we just had, this mass is 0. So along this line, we are critical, which is just this kind of semicircle along these bosonic theories where we are self-dual. So that's pretty much the end. Just want to mention like some open questions or what are interesting directions. So one thing to check is it'd actually be nice to see, have actual numerical tests for this these kind of dualities. So there's been kind of some work on a related version of this, with kind of the multi-flavor version of the duality. It would be interesting to also have something that maybe supports from a more generic lattice model rather than these wires, this kind of duality. There are all kind of additional dualities one can think about. If we have extra symmetries, actually have spin-filled Dirac fermions, what's going on? Like I think quite a few of these have already been worked out, but there's probably more to discover. One can try to think, can one use this to understand magnetic phases in spin models, for example, quantum spin liquids by using this kind of duality formulation rather than the more familiar state particle constructions. Or another example of different symmetries would be, don't take complex Dirac fermions, but actually take Majorana fermions. So in that case, there exists a bosonized theory. But as far as I understand, the symmetries are still a little bit unclear. So maybe this kind of approach where one really keeps operators and the symmetries present at all stages will allow us to work out how these symmetries are implemented. OK, thank you.
Are there questions or comments? So the field theories you were writing down are all Lorentz invariant, it looked like. I guess the lattice, the wire model isn't.
That's right, yeah.
So there's not a, I guess the question is there an important role here of Lorentz symmetry, or is do these dualities persist if we lose Lorentz symmetry?
Well, so in our wire models, we actually do have this kind of this duality is an exact statement, right? So in that sense, it doesn't seem to use the Lorentz symmetry. Now, of course, the subtlety which is kind of hidden is, do we actually know how to take the continuum limit? In some cases, we think we do. For example, in the free fermion case, it's certainly okay to do that. But once you have the gauge field, it's not 100% clear where the continuums here, which I wrote down, actually does correspond to the wire model. I think it's suggestive. It kind of it looks the right way. But I think that's a possible issue. But I think that so we have wire model. There's no Lorentz symmetry, and there we definitely have very explicitly has these dualities. There's certainly the field theory evidence which supports these dualities otherwise. So it probably just checks out, but that's one caveat, I guess.
Can you play around with one boson with three vortices and one vortex and three bosons being dual to one another? For example, have you played around with changing one vortex and one boson? Considering other odd numbers.
I haven't played around with that. You might think it, for example, if you want. So in this case, essentially, implicitly, always it poses that integer filling, which is when your vortices can hop. So if you start with boson at a different kind of filling factor, that not a single vortex can hop, but only a double vortex can hop or something, then you might be able to have a model where you actually have duality between single boson and multiple vortices. Yeah. I haven't done this, but it should be. Could be interesting.
Can you say a few more words about a 3+1 dimension there?
I honestly can't. Though, it's sort of tantalizing that in principle what we've been what I've been trying to argue is that we can really go from 1D to 2D and pretty much anything checks out. We take this duality in 1+1 dimension and one can kind of generalize it and one does get everything which we care about in 2+1. So it's sort of suggested that maybe we can take it one step further, start with a 2+1 dimensional model and go into third dimension. The tricky part, of course, is essentially what's kind of depicted here, that in this 3+1 dimension, you don't have point-like particles in your dual degrees of freedom. Right? Your dual degrees of freedom are kind of line objects, so form these kind of world sheets. And I don't right now know how to make sense of that.
It certainly can't be self-dual, right? Totally
this particular model certainly cannot, yes. But one can ask, for example, is there a kind of a fermionic version of this in some loose sense?
Just a very minor comment. It's a function that you had of 1 minus z or 1 plus z. It's not any special, it's a very interesting function, and it's maybe concerning fact regarding the duality itself that if you do this twice, you get back original function. So if you do 1 minus z, 1 plus z, and plug it back into itself, that gives you identity. So f of f of z is equal to z.
Right, essentially, when you go from bosons to fermions back to bosons.
Forget about how you do it. Any duality, basically, any duality you do twice, but by its nature, basically, it has to have this form of
right.
All right, great. Let's thank both our speakers.